seat, as if I were being pushed by a huge, heavy weight. It was crushing my chest, crushing the life out of me. Time ticked on and on, with no sign or word from anyone who could tell me what the hell was going on. My parents arrived with Oscar, and I left it to Dina to tell them what she told me. My mother came to sit next to me. She held my hand, but I didn't hold back. I sat in the chair, staring at nothing. If something's happened to her, if I lose her too, if I lost Casey, I was going to lay down on the floor and not get up. I was done. Nothing left. I'd finally reconciled losing my brother. I couldn't survive losing her, too.
"Are you here for Casey Dawson?" a voice asked.
A doctor stood there, his face grim. Here it was. The moment. In another 10 seconds, this man was going to tell me how the rest of my life was going to be. "Stand up for her," I told myself. "Stand up. One last time." I found my armor, the old suit of mental chainmail. It was like slipping on an old coat. I stood up and pushed forward on leaden legs, my heart thudding a dull, heavy pang in my chest. "I'm here for her," I said. The doctor was a young man, early 30s maybe, with sharp blue eyes behind glasses and tanned skin. "A wimp," my tortured brain declared. "No way this guy is going to destroy me. I've faced down doctors before and they're bad news. I can take this guy." A pathetic bravado, but it was all I had to stem the tide of terror ripping through me.
"I'm Dr. Barron. I'm the head of obstetrics and gynecology. I was among the surgery team to assist Miss Dawson."
"And?" I said. "How is she?"
"She's doing well. Stable now. She suffered a ruptured fallopian tube due to an ectopic pregnancy. Are you familiar with the term?"
My brain was hugging doing well and stable and screaming in relief. I nodded and sucked in a breath, tried to listen over the rush of blood in my ears. "The embryo never made it to her uterus. It implanted in the left fallopian tube and began to grow. The tube then ruptured, which necessitated surgery to fix the rupture and stop the internal bleeding. She's not out of the woods quite yet, but her prognosis is promising, and her vital signs are strong. I see nothing to indicate she wouldn't make a full recovery. We'll keep her here a few days, at minimum, to ensure there are no further complications." The doctor's face took on a grave expression, and he looked at me.
"Are you her husband?"
"I'm the father," I said softly. "Was the father."
"I'm very sorry," Dr. Barron said. "Ectopic never has a happy ending. It's almost unheard of for a fetus to survive tubal implantation. On the other hand, a ruptured fallopian tube is a serious medical emergency. At this time, I'm confident Casey's going to be fine, and most likely she'll still be able to have children."
She's going to be fine. I clung to those words like a drowning man in a hurricane. My pulse slowed, anchored down now by the other half of his news.
"Can I see her?" "She's being moved from post-surgery to recovery. I'll have a nurse tell you when she's ready, though she'll likely be quite groggy from the anesthesia."
I sat back down in the chair, my leg jumping. "I'm so sorry, honey," my mother said. I didn't look at her or anyone else. I kept my gaze fixed on the nurses' station, following them as they went about their business, inwardly commanding one of them to come and find me and tell me I could see Casey, so I could tell her the baby was gone. God damn it, she's lost enough. Finally, one nurse separated herself from the desk and came toward me. You can see her now. My beautiful girl looked to be asleep as I pulled a chair beside her. Her face was pale against the white pillow, but her eyes fluttered when I took her hand. My chest was filled with a relief so profound it made me dizzy, even as my heart broke for her, for both of us. Hey, baby, I said, my voice gruff. Casey turned her head to me and smiled a funny, pained smile. I could see the anesthesia was still dragging at her, clouding the usual sharpness in her eyes.
He says she's fine, Casey mumbled. She's safe. We don't have to worry.
Shh, I said. She didn't know. I wouldn't tell her now. Not while she was half asleep. Just rest, I whispered. I held her hands as she drifted back into sleep, staring at the white sheets, listening to the machine that monitored her heart. I felt the weight of it all, the relief, the grief, the guilt she had to suffer another loss. All of it pressed down on me, cracking my armor, stealing my air. I felt dizzy with the tempest of emotions that battered me like a hurricane. I had no tarot card, no silly toy to shake and give me an answer. It was too much. So much easier to push it down, lock it all back up. I needed help. I needed my brother. Casey's head moved weakly against the pillow.
Jonah, she said.
I swallowed hard. It's Theo, honey. It's me, not him. I'm here now. Don't you remember? She opened her eyes. They were clearer now, and the corners of her mouth lifted in a funny little smile. Not doped up, but patient.
Jonah says she's safe.
Her hand reached up to touch my face.
Jonah? I whispered. She's safe with him, Teddy.
The smile still on her face, she fell asleep again. I fell asleep with my head on the sheet and woke to Casey whispering my name. She was fully awake now, the grief shining in her eyes. We held each other, her tears falling to stain the hospital sheets. I felt each one, each shake of her body against mine, like a knife cutting me, leaving scars I'd carry for the rest of my life.
I'm sorry, Case, I said. I'm sorry you had to go through this. I'm so fucking sorry. Don't, Teddy. She was ours. Together. Don't try to take it all. Not this time.
She clutched my hand in hers.
Stay here with me.
I nodded, let it go on a ragged sigh before it could bury me again.
Okay, baby, I will. I'm here.
She smiled then, the most heartbreaking sight I'd ever seen, as tears spilled down her cheeks.
We can't go back to how it was before. We have to say everything in our hearts.
She turned her head to me on the pillow.
I was so happy for this baby. thinking it could show you how much I love you. I was so afraid you'd never know how much, how deep it runs. Worried some small part of you would always doubt or wonder.
No, I said. I don't wonder or worry. I love you. You're my fucking world.
I started to come undone again.
You're my entire world. My universe, Casey whispered, her fingers brushing my cheek softly.
You're my universe. I love you, Teddy.
She sighed then, as if content, her eyes closed.
He was right about everything, she said. We have so much love in us. No end to it.
She slept then, and I held her hand as my tears fell unheeded. Love had no end. She was infinite. She was a universe, my universe, and I was hers. Love had no boundaries, no rules, no favorites, and no limits.
Chapter 48. Casey. I stared at the hospital ceiling. My room quiet, but for the heart monitor they attached me to. I had forced Theo to go to the cafeteria and eat something. He'd left, reluctantly, and Oscar and Dina, Beverly and Henry, had taken turns visiting me, offering me sweet words and their love, but was grateful when they left. My lower abdomen felt heavy from the surgery, a deep ache that protested when I moved. How can it feel so heavy when there's nothing there? A pall of sadness hung over me, but it was nebulous and shifting. A shred of a memory from the fog of anesthesia kept trying to find me, but every time I grasped for it, it retreated back. I wanted to remember because it was good. It brought me a peace, even the whisper of it I managed to catch. Jonah. My door opened and a nurse, Carla, peeked her head in. Are you up for one more visitor? I was going to tell her you needed to rest, but she said she's your mother. I stared, my fingers curling around the sheets. My mother? Carla pushed open the door. I saw the flowers first. Columns of blue bonnets nestled with baby's breath. My favorite when I was a little girl. My mother stepped into the room, holding the bouquet. Her eyes met mine, and whatever had happened between us, however many years of separation, were all erased. I just wanted her. I held my arms out to my mom, and she quickly set the flowers down while Carla softly closed the door behind her. My mom bent over me, holding me carefully. Oh, my sweet baby, she whispered against my hair. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I cried against her, inhaled her. She smelled of Shalimar perfume, her favorite. My arms remember what it was like to hold her and be held by her. I was thrust back in time to other moments when I'd been a scared little girl who'd wanted nothing more than to be comforted by her mother. And she'd been there. Until she wasn't. My mom pulled away and sat in the chair Theo had been living in for the past day and a half. She dabbed her eyes with a tissue from the box beside my bed and huffed a deep breath. I have so much to tell you, to explain, she said in her feathery voice. You deserve the truth. I wanted to tell you so badly when you were there in our house. I couldn't believe you were really there. The years. She shook her head. Once so much time has slipped by, it becomes easier and easier to let it. But when I saw you, I felt every second of those 7 years, and it nearly crushed me to know you'd felt them too. I'd made plans that very day to fly here, to find you. I told your father. She swallowed hard, her eyes remembering the moment she spoke of. I told him, enough was enough, that I was going with or without him. Hope flared in my heart. Is he? She shook her head. He's walled himself so deep and so thick, I don't know that he'll ever find his way out. I nodded. What happened to us, Mom? What happened with Dad? She cast her gaze down to her hands, twisting in her lap. He never wanted children. We agreed when we got married that we wouldn't. I was a shy young woman, and he was the first man to show me any interest or love. He was my only chance, my father kept telling me. And I knew he was right. But I loved Jim, too. I did. I agreed we wouldn't have children. But deep down, I wanted one. I wanted you. She shook her head. But even after 5 empty years of marriage, I was too weak to say I'd changed my mind. I didn't sabotage him. He thought I did. But it just happened. You happened, and I was so happy. He acts like he hates me, I whispered. Tears spilled over her eyes. He doesn't. I know he doesn't. He's afraid. He married a woman, me, whom he never had to fear would leave him, and he kept you at arm's length your whole life, so he wouldn't have to feel anything real. There's a piece of him that is broken, but I still have hope that it can be repaired. Someday. In the meanwhile, she smiled at me, brushed the hair from my eyes. You have me. I'm sorry. I hope that's enough. Yeah, Mom, I whispered, reaching for her. It's more than enough. It's everything. Chapter 49. Casey. They released me from the hospital a week later, and for the next month, Theo threw himself into his work, remaking the old Vegas ink into something entirely his. His vision. His legacy. The one he could keep after the other had been lost. The ache of losing the baby hung between us. And I knew, despite what Theo promised, he was retreating into his armor, rebuilding walls. He loved me. I felt it in every beat of his heart against mine. It kept me warm when I slept, wrapped in his arms. His grasp on me never loosened, not even in deep sleep. Always on guard. Always vigilant. He took on everything shouldering the burden alone so those he loved didn't have to. Early one morning, I woke, and the first feeling that hit me, the one Yvonne said held the truth, settled on the still bare skin of my shoulder. The space that belonged to Teddy, empty and waiting. I woke him with a kiss. "The shop is done, isn't it?" I asked. He nodded.
"Finished yesterday."
"I'm going to sing at your reopening," I said. "Grant and Phoebe said the press release was getting a ton of buzz. You'll have a huge crowd."
"Of course,"
he said.
"You're so talented, babe. They'll line up and down the block to see you."
"And you," I said. "Your art is astonishing. It's you, your heart and soul." I traced the tense line of his jaw, wishing I could make the hard edges melt away. "I know what tattoo I want."
"You do? What is it?"
I sat up, tugged his hand. "Come on, I'll tell you when we get there." My heart swelled with pride as Theo unlocked the door of the shop and I stepped inside. Vegas Inc. was no more. Theo had knocked down the wall between it and the nail salon, creating a wide entry. The black and white checkered tiles and red walls were gone, replaced by gray hardwood. The entry walls were covered with darker gray wallpaper with a repeating fleur-de-lis pattern. On them were hung large glass displays of tattoo samples, framed in tomato red. An overstuffed vinyl sofa in the same red color sat against the wall beside the reception desk. I picked up the magic eight ball there, gave it a shake. Has Teddy become a believer in messages from the other side? I watched for the reply and turned it toward him. "It is certain," he smirked.
"It is certain that ball belongs to Vivian."
I smiled, then tugged his hands. "Show me the rest." He took my hand and led me further into the space. The hardwood floors continued to four tattoo stations, each with black reclining chairs and smaller matching chairs for the artist. Prints by Ann Harper and Ted Gall were interspersed on the dark green walls with more tattoo sample displays. The entire place was elegant but edgy, masculine to reflect its owner, but not intimidating. "It's beautiful." I wrapped my arms around his neck. "I'm so proud of you. Have I said that yet?"
"Once or twice."
His tone was teasing, but his smile faded quickly. He led me to his station and readied a paper and blue ink pen from his desk.
"So,"
he said,
"do you want..."
He cleared his throat.
"Something to do with the baby? Or maybe Joe..."
"I want your blue butterfly." Theo frowned, and his eyes looked away toward the past.
"You mean the blue butterfly from that old story? When Jonah and I were kids?"
"The imaginary butterfly that got away." He sat back in his chair.
"Why?"
"Because it's everything you are. You're strong and brave, and you'd take all the pain if it meant making those you love feel it less. You shoulder that burden by yourself. You put on armor and put up walls. But inside, you have this gentle, loving soul. A goodness running down the core of you, all along that steel strength. I want that on my body. The essence of you. I love you, Teddy. I want your love with me, embedded in my skin for all the days of my life."
"Permanent," Theo whispered. I nodded. For always. Before he could say another word, I climbed into his lap and kissed him hard and deep. He responded with a small intake of breath, and I felt the tension coiled in his body fall away. He kissed me with all his fire and the passion. I felt it come roaring back to life, warming the parts of me that had gone cold after what we'd lost. Casey, he breathed. I love you. God, I love you so much. I love you, I said against his mouth, my hands reaching to undo the buttons of my blouse. I stripped off my shirt, then unclasped my bra. I let them both fall to the floor and lay face down on his tattoo chair. I'm ready.
I have to sketch it out, show you.
I shook my head. I don't want to see it. Theo's eyes widened. I saw the pulse dance in the hollow of his throat.
You want me to tattoo it on you, sight unseen?
Yeah, I do.
Why?
I want that butterfly exactly as you imagined it. Nothing from me to alter or change what it was. No sketch, no stencil. I want your art, Teddy. I'm your canvas. He stared at me a moment more.
No stencil. Freehand?
I smiled. Are you this difficult with all your clients?
Only the crazy ones, he said.
And in his laugh, I heard that he was going to be okay. I waited while he put on his plastic gloves and stack of soft cloths to wipe away excess ink and blood, readied his needles and inks. I turned my head so I wouldn't see the colors he chose. A few minutes later, I heard his chair groan as he stood, and I felt him over me. Soft lips pressed a kiss to my shoulder blade.
Ready?
He said, his breath hot on my skin. I turned my head. I wanted to watch him work. I'm ready. Theo leaned over me from his chair. The gun buzzed, and I felt his hand rest on my skin a split second before the sharp bite of the needle. It had been years since I'd had a tattoo, but the pain was familiar. A deep, stinging ache. A good tattoo artist knew exactly when to relent. To wipe the blood and excess ink, and then go again. Theo was more than good. I watched him, watched his eyes, intent on my skin. His movements sure and steady. His own tattooed arms holding the gun, muscles tight against the short sleeves of his shirt. Is it wrong to say having you tattoo me is turning me on?
Yes, he said, not looking up. As a professional, I find it highly inappropriate.
I smiled and bit my lip. I hadn't been teasing. I felt the deep bite of Theo's needle on the shallow skin over my shoulder blade, all the way down my spine. The vibration settled between my legs. The need grew with the pain, receded when Theo pulled the needle away to wipe the blood and ink, and again when he changed the needle. The texture of the pain changed then. The needle's bite was more of a scrape, stinging brush strokes, as if he were coloring my skin with a marker that's tip was made of glass dust. You're shading now, I said, feeling the scrape of the tattoo well across my shoulder blade. That's a big butterfly.
A butterfly?
Theo said, intent on his work. I thought you said you wanted a giant happy face with shit happens along the bottom.
Ha ha, I said, only pretending to be annoyed. Well, inside, my heart soared to see my Theo come back. After 3 hours, he was done. 3 hours watching that beautiful man bent over me, creating a work of art on my body, giving me a piece of himself. My shoulder throbbed, but the pain was second to the need I had for him.
You ready to see it?
He asked. His voice was low, gruff, and if he was nervous, he didn't show it. He looked at me with hunger burning in his eyes. I nodded. I'm ready. I moved to stand in front of the mirror he had on the wall of his station, while he took up a hand mirror from his desk. His eyes swept over my naked breasts as I turned to face him. He held the mirror so I could see my back reflected in the larger on the wall. Oh my God, I breathed. A blue butterfly poised on my shoulder, its wings the color of a summer sky when the sun is about to set, rimmed in sharp, deep black, shining like onyx where the light caught it. It was so real, so perfectly rendered. I imagined it would fold and unfold its wings at any moment, fly off my shoulder and into Theo's palm. But the butterfly remained on its perch, at the end of the universe. Theo had rendered an arc of Jonah's glass along the right side of my shoulder blade, a dark piece of sky, shining with stars and stardust within. It streaked across my skin before tapering away into forever, beyond what my skin could hold. Unfinished, but unending. I didn't say a word, but pulled my gaze from the mirror to the eyes drinking me in. He set the mirror down. Then his hand was at the back of my head, buried in my hair, the other pulling me close. He kissed me hard, his mouth demanding everything. I parted my mouth, taking him in deep.
Marry me, he whispered between kisses. Marry me, Case. Be my wife.
Yes, I breathed. Yes, God, yes. We gave ourselves up to each other completely. A perfect harmony of love and lust. Our bodies striving to show the other what our souls knew. It was in every touch, every kiss. Our kisses were words, declarations made with our hands on our bodies. Promises made with every gasping breath we shared. And the joy I felt wasn't only for his proposal, but for what it meant. That despite our losses, we would keep going. Never give in or give up. Because love always wins. Always.
Epilogue. Theo. I shut off the lights over the tattoo stations and grabbed my jacket from the antique coat stand in the waiting area. The appointment book lay closed on the front desk, Vivian's kitschy knick-knacks arrayed around it, the magic eight ball front and center, as usual. I flipped open the appointment book, as I did every night after the other artists went home. The next day's schedule was almost fully booked. I already knew this. Vivian gave me hourly updates about how well we were doing. Still, I had to see it for myself. See it in black ink on white paper every night before I left.
I'm doing it, Jonah. Building a life. A legacy of my own.
From the front door, the rap of knuckles on glass. By the light of the street lamp, I could see my father shifting from foot to foot, glancing around the empty parking lot. One hand in his jacket pocket, the other running through his silver hair. I unlocked the deadbolt and opened the door. Dad, what's wrong? Mom okay?
Fine, fine, my dad said, rocking back on his heels. I thought it was time I saw your place.
I stared. At 11 o'clock at night?
I heard you're really busy. Didn't want to interrupt.
He met my eye.
Can I come in?
Yeah, sure. I moved aside and watched mutely as my father came inside my shop for the first time. Both hands in his pockets now, he strolled the small entry like a visitor at a museum, taking in the framed tattoo samples. My eyes narrowed, remembering how my father's face had always been wide open with joy at Jonah's exhibitions. Tonight he was closed off, his lips drawn down, his eyes hard. I crossed my arms, braced myself against his expression. I wanted to ask what the hell he was doing here, what he wanted. To see for himself how I'd squandered Jonah's money, how I'd gotten an advanced degree but chose to use it for a business that polluted bodies with ink. Fuck that. I wouldn't say a word. If he had something to say, he could say it, but I was done inviting his disapproval.
Incredible amount of variety, he said, turning to me. You can do all these?
Yes. He nodded, strolled deeper into the shop, hands clasped behind his back. I followed after, turned the lights back on, and watched him take in my place. He went to the nearest station, Edgar's, and tapped his fingers along the reclining chair's brown vinyl.
Looks like a dentist's chair, he said. Does it hurt as much?
I shrugged. It can. My dad inspected the art Edgar had on the wall of his station and pursed his lips. Edgar did our more hardcore designs for our more hardcore clients. Snarling wolves with blood dripping from their fangs, horned demons, skulls and flames.
This isn't your station, Dad finally said.
No, I'm over there. I jerked my head.
Can I see?
I tensed. Since I began tattooing 6 years ago, my dad had never asked to see my work. Not once. Doesn't matter. You're a success. You don't need anything from him. Not one goddamn thing.
Sure, I heard myself say, and led him to my area in the back corner.
He stepped inside the low wooden walls and inspected the art hanging above. Prints of my favorite obscure artists, framed sets of client photos, and the unfinished series. Casey had cut out the inked article and framed that, too. The silence was getting too heavy as I waited for the hammer to fall, for my dad to pass his judgment. I gritted my teeth, determined to not say a word, to not concede ground.
Okay, I think it's that one, he said,
pointed at a sample of a name in sharp, glassy font.
And that one.
He swiveled his finger to a boxy, sturdy, Old English font. Turning to me, he took off his jacket and set it on the reclining chair, then began rolling up his shirt sleeve.
Wait, you want a tattoo?
My arms fell to my sides, the shock stealing my strength. My father nodded, The eyes holding mine were heavy with regret, instead of sharp-edged disapproval.
"Am I too late?" he asked, his voice fraying at the ends.
He cleared his throat.
"I mean, it's late at night."
"No," I said, my heart pounding in my throat, softening my own voice. "No, Dad, you're not too late." Another silence fell, and we stood within it for a moment. Then my dad nodded gruffly and looked away.
"Good. So, how does this work?"
I moved into my space with him, flipped on the desk lamp.
Well?
My thoughts were scattered over a wave of nerves, as if this were my first tattoo.
"You need to tell me what you want and where you want it."
My dad sat on the chair and tapped the inside of his right forearm.
"Right here seems appropriate. And what I want is names. Yours and Jonah's."
I stopped, stared.
"Can you do that? In those styles I pointed out?"
I nodded. "Yeah. Yeah, I can." I grabbed my sketch pad and pen. I envisioned our names in the fonts my dad wanted and quickly mocked up the tattoo. Jonah's name curling over the top of mine, his font more elegant, mine more solid.
"Something like this?"
I showed him the sketch. His downturned lips turned into a smile, and he looked at me in a way I'd never seen him look at me before.
"Exactly like that. You're incredible."
20 years leaned on me hard. 2 decades of waiting to hear something like that from Dad. The weight pressed, stubborn and mistrustful.
"You didn't come to the grand opening," I said.
I tossed the sketch back on the desk and crossed my arms to conceal my shaking hands. My father didn't flinch or shy from my stare.
"No, I didn't. And I regret it. I regret a lot of things. Actions I took. Words I said I can never take back. But even more, I regret the words I never said."
He glanced around my shop, and then back to me.
"I always thought Jonah was the glue that held our family together."
"He was," I said.
"Maybe so," my dad said, shaking his head. "When he passed, we all fell apart. We stopped, halted in our tracks, helpless and broken. But not you. You kept going. You took care of your mother when I couldn't. You said you were going to buy your own place, and you did. You went back to school so you'd know what you're doing. I see it all now, Theo. You take care of yours. You took care of Jonah all the time he was sick. All the way to his last breath, you were there for him."
"Dad, don't." He held up his hand.
"Let me finish, or I never will."
He swallowed hard, but never looked away from me.
"You took care of Casey when she was alone in New Orleans, drinking herself to a slow death. You stepped up when she was pregnant, and you stepped up again when she wasn't. You love her."
I nodded, not trusting myself to speak. He reached out and put his hand on my shoulder, hard but warm. It passed through the wall, melted through layers of armor, sank into my inked skin until I felt my father touch my bones.
"I see you, Theo. I see you.
If Jonah was the glue that held us together, you're the rock we set our backs to. I'm proud of you for that. His chin quivered. His voice cracked.
I'm so proud you're my son.
His hand slid around the back of my head, and his forehead pressed mine. We didn't cry. We breathed a hard, shaky breath, as 20 years let go of my heart like fists unclenching.
Dad clapped my shoulders and cleared his throat. Talk is cheap, he said. Let's do this. Get it done before I chicken out, as the kids like to say.
He waited, as I sat in my rolling chair at my desk, transferring mine and Jonah's names to the stencil paper. He eyed me as I set a needle in the barrel of my tattoo machine.
It's going to hurt, isn't it? I might get through only one name tonight.
You can handle it, I said, grinning, and set his elbow on the arm of the chair.
Ready? Ready.
Just as I readied the needle above his skin, he put his hand on my wrist.
Wait.
I looked up.
Yeah?
He smiled, patted my cheek like he hadn't done since I was a kid.
Do your name first.
Jesus, Dad, you're killing me. I had to laugh as I sucked in a breath, let it out slowly until my hands were steady. I bent my head over his arm, holding it gently but firmly. The rotor buzzed. The needle went to work. I watched, almost as if from afar, as my name appeared on his skin, embedded there forever in black ink. Then Jonah's name appeared under my gloved hands, to the side and above mine. When I finished, I held up a mirror to show him.
See? You're tougher than you thought.
He stared at the image of his son's names in the fonts he'd chosen. It was one of the best things I'd ever inked. My brother and I on our father's skin. Forever. My dad stared too long, his face unreadable. He hates it. He hates that I did that to him, and it's too fucking late now. Permanent. I rubbed the back of my neck.
Well? It's perfect, Dad said hoarsely.
He caught sight of his reflection, and the tears welling in his eyes. He coughed, shot me a stern look.
Stings like a son of a bitch, though.
I gave him his look right back. Good. His eyes widened. For a moment, he stared at me, agape. Then a bellowing laugh burst from him, warm and rich, and it filled my shop and every last empty space in it.
Epilogue 2. Casey. 3 years later. The weather in Pittsburgh is hot and sticky at the late end of August. I feel the humidity wrap around me the second I lug my 6-month pregnant body out of the rental car and into the parking lot behind Carnegie Mellon's University Center. Theo unstraps our 14-month-old daughter from her car seat in the back. Stroller? I ask. Nah, I got her. Theo doesn't like using the stroller. He prefers to hold Franny as much as possible. He settles her into the crook of his arm. His tattoo stark against the teddy bear pants my mom sent us. She sends Franny something at least once a month. Through her granddaughter, she's coming back to me slowly, little by little, day by day. We stroll across the Carnegie Mellon campus. The walkways are less crowded in summer. Only a few students cross our path as we make our way to the University Center. We passed through a little grove of oak trees, their boughs shading little wrought iron tables and chairs. I smile, as I always do, when I see the placard naming the grove Legacy Plaza. Theo meets my eye and smiles too. Sometimes, it's hard to believe in coincidences. Franny looks around with mild curiosity, her light brown eyes, the same as her father's, catch a squirrel spiraling up a tree trunk. She has one pudgy fist crammed against her mouth, her hair, brown and curling like her uncle's was, falls around her face, rounding it out even more. She's a calm, happy baby. She hardly ever fusses, and I can count on one hand the meltdowns she's had since officially becoming a toddler. I wonder if she remembers the trip we made here last year. She was only a few months old. Still, part of me likes to think she was aware of everything. Immediately inside the university center, the atrium opens up and out, revealing the installation. A riot of color and light in the sunlight streaming in from the windows. Every piece of glass illuminated. The waterfall, the sea life, and the blazing sun hanging above. Your Uncle Jonah made that, I tell Franny. Pretty, pretty, she says, her eyes lighting up. As we do every year, Theo and I move to the small stand to the right of the installation. On it, a smiling picture of Jonah next to a short, too short, biography. I touch the letters of his name. Theo stares at his brother's face. A moment of silence. The sun outside slips respectfully behind the clouds. Even Franny is quiet. A shared inhale and exhale. Then we smile at each other. Franny reaches for the colorful glass, and Theo brings her closer to it. He shows our daughter the exhibit, helping her name the turtles, turls, and the octopus. Octopus. I ease myself onto a bench and run my hand over my bulging belly. The baby within, also a girl, kicks and turns and pushes against my hand as if she's trying to break out. She never stops. Oftentimes, I'm up in the middle of the night, walking back and forth in our living room, singing lullabies to her until she falls asleep. She's going to be a handful, I can tell already. Like her daddy, I think. I look to Theo holding Franny, and my heart feels like it's too big for my chest. The sun emerges again, slicing rays through the installation. I lean back and watch the glowing light play off the colors. The pearly sea foam, the flowing cerulean water, the violets and pinks of the coral reef. But it's the sun, Jonah's sun, that always draws and holds my eye the longest. It's a tangle of orange, yellow, and red curls, chaotic, yet perfect. Every piece as it should be. Except. My eyes are drawn to the left side of the sun. A gap in the tangle where one ray of orange light is missing. The curl that smashed to bits when the installation was hastily removed from the Vegas gallery 3 years ago. It hit the floor, scattering into 1,000 shards that were then crunched underfoot to dust. Only a few slivers remained for Theo and I to find. Theo comes to sit beside me. He settles back on the bench, and Franny slumps against his chest, her eyes drooping. I reach along the back of the bench to rest my hand on my husband's shoulders. I kiss him lightly, then our baby's chubby cheek. We sit for a minute in silence as Franny falls asleep. I see Theo's eyes drink in the installation. He smiles as he finds the gap in the sun. "It's still my favorite piece," I say. Theo takes my hand, kisses my fingers.
"Mine too."
I feel the warmth from the red and gold curls of glass. My love for Jonah, a warm glow in my heart, like a sun that never sets. And deeper within, a fiery core. My love for Theo burning with powerful, unending intensity. "Love again," I murmur. He told me to love again, and I do. So much.
"He told me to love you."
Theo's warm, soft eyes meet mine.
"But I already did. So much."
Only the tiniest wave of shock courses through me, followed by understanding. "I knew," I say. "Somehow, I think I've always known." I touch his cheek. "Why tell me now?" Theo shrugs, making Franny rise and fall with him.
"Felt like the right time. And the right place."
I smile and turn my gaze back to the glass. "Yes, it is." We sit a little while longer, and when we rise to leave, Theo takes my hand, our daughter tucked securely in his other arm. I recall when he and I got up off our knees in the wind gallery, shedding tears and love amidst the shattered remains of Jonah's glass. We stood up together, emerged from the barren space together, bonded not in shared grief, but in shared love. Theo and I, a treasure out of the ruin. This concludes All In by Emma Scott, narrated by Jeremy York and Caitlin Kelly. Copyright 2016 by Emma Scott. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Emma Scott and was produced in the year 2017 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.